The person she imagined to be called the leader was questioning her about astrology, and she was answering smoothly and calmly. Only she could detect the well-disguised rising panic in her own voice. The leader pushed a button, and a maroon velvet wall slid aside, revealing a large bank of flat TV monitors. Each of the monitors was showing a kaleidoscope of different images. A few seconds from a game show, a few seconds from a cop show, a few seconds from a supermarket warehouse security system, a few seconds from somebody's holiday movies, a few seconds of sex, a few seconds of news, a few seconds of comedy. It was clear that the leader was very proud of all this stuff, and he was waving his hands like a conductor while continuing at the same time to complete gibberish. Another wave of his hands, and all the screens cleared to form one giant computer screen, showing in diagrammatic form all the planets of the solar system, mapped out against a background of the stars in their constellations. The display was completely static. "We have great skills," the leader was saying. "Great skills in computation, in cosmological trigonometry, in three-dimensional navigational calculus. Great skills, great, great skills. Only we have lost them. It is too bad. We like to have skills, only they have gone. They are in space somewhere, hurtling. With our names and the details of our homes and loved ones. Please," he said, gesturing her forward to sit at the computer's console, "be skillful for us." Obviously what happened next was that Tricia quickly set the video camera up on its tripod to capture the whole scene. She then walked into shot herself and sat down calmly in front of the giant computer display, spent a few moments familiarizing herself with the interface, and then started smoothly and competently to pretend that she had the faintest idea what she was doing. It hadn't been that difficult, in fact. She was, after all, a mathematician and astrophysicist by training, and a television presenter by experience, and what science she had forgotten over the years, she is more than capable of making up by bluffing. The computer she was working on was clear evidence that the Grebulons came from a far more advanced and sophisticated culture than their current vacuous state suggested, and with its aid she was able, within about half an hour, to cobble together a rough working model of the solar system. It wasn't particularly accurate or anything, but it looked good. The planets were whizzing around in reasonably good simulations of their orbits, and you could watch the movement of the whole piece of virtual cosmological clockwork from any point within the system, very roughly. You could watch from Earth, you could watch from Mars, etc. You could watch from the surface of the planet Rupert. Tricia had been quite impressed with herself, but also very impressed with the computer system she was working on. Using a computer workstation on Earth, the task would probably have taken a year or so of programming. When she was finished, the leader came up behind her and watched. He was very pleased and delighted with what she had achieved. "Good," he said. "And now, please, I would like you to demonstrate how to use the system you have just designed to translate the information in this book for me." Quietly, he put a book down in front of her. It was You and Your Planets by Gail Andrews. Tricia stopped the tape again. She was definitely feeling very wobbly indeed. The feeling that she was hallucinating had now receded, but had not left anything any easier or clearer in her head. She pushed her seat back from the editing desk and wondered what to do. Years ago she had left the field of astronomical research because she knew, without any doubt whatsoever, that she had met a being from another planet. At a party. And she had also known, without any doubt whatsoever, that she would have made herself a laughingstock if she had ever said so. But how could she study cosmology and not say anything about the single most important thing she knew about it? She had done the only thing she could do. She had left. Now she worked in television, and the same thing had happened again. She had videotape, actual videotape, of the most astounding story in the history of, well, anything. A forgotten outpost of an alien civilization marooned on the outermost planet of our own solar system. She had the story. She had been there. She had seen it. She had the videotape, for God's sake. And if she ever showed it to anybody, she would be a laughingstock. How could she prove any of this? It wasn't even worth thinking about. The whole thing was a nightmare from virtually any angle she cared to look at it. Her head was beginning to throb. She had some aspirin in her bag. She went out of the little editing suite to the water dispenser down the corridor. She took the aspirin and drank several cups of water. The place seemed to be very quiet. Usually there were more people bustling about the place, or at least some people bustling around the place. She popped her head round the door of the editing suite next to hers, but there was no one there. She had gone rather overboard keeping people out of her own suite. "Do not disturb," the notice read. "Do not even think of entering. I don't care what it is. Go away. I'm busy."